Hello and welcome to the IntraFish podcast, where we bring you the week's most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm editor Drew Cherry, joined by executive editor John Fiorillo. It was a big news week, especially for the feed industry today, as the Peruvian government announced it would more than double the harvest quota for anchovy in its key fishing area. Now, why do we care about anchovy? Well, it's the single largest fishery biomass in the world, for one, but it's also the single most important fishery for the aquaculture feed sector. Now, assuming that companies harvest this higher quota, which is not always the case, last year's season was canceled well short of the full quota harvest, we should expect a little relief in feed cost inflation. And that's what some of our sources have told us in the feed industry and the fish meal sector. So that would be great news for the aquaculture industry that's been really, really struggling under those costs. Also, land-based salmon farming giant Atlantic Sapphire may be on the comeback trail. The company's production volume in the first quarter was close to its entire output in 2023, the company said this week. And it seems to have some momentum. It raised $35 million in February to keep operations moving forward. Now, this little bit of good news has actually pushed the company's share price up around 13% over the past 5 days. Nowhere near the $1 billion value that the company once had back in the old days. But hey, good news nonetheless. Some major personnel news, as the CEO of Skretting Teresa Log Berjord and her boss Fulco van Lede, the CEO of parent group Nutreco, announced their departures. Berjord will be replaced by Bastian van Tilburg, who was already in the Nutreco system. It's too early to know exactly what led to the departures, but our team will get to the bottom of that soon, I'm sure. Now, if you'll recall, a few weeks ago we brought on our colleague Anders Furuset of IntraFish.no to talk about Norway's low-quality production fish problem. If you didn't hear that episode, go look in our archives. You can go find it. Take a listen. Really interesting. So the problem has gotten worse. Across 8 consecutive weeks, production fish percentages were over 35%, at one point hitting 38.8%. That's stunning, in particular during a time when the industry is crying out for ways to increase volume. So we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars lost. Norway's fisheries minister, Cecilia Myrseth, this week told IntraFish.no she fears some market consequences from the worrying trend. Our colleague Dominic Welling wrote a story this week on the new harvesting standards from the Marine Stewardship Council, the world's leading wild fish certification body. And that's what we're going to focus on this week. We know we've discussed the eco-label issue on a couple of podcasts already, but it's arguably one of the most pressing issues facing the industry right now, so we need to explore it, and the industry certainly has given us a lot of feedback that it's one of the big things on their mind right now. So remember that both the Aquaculture Stewardship Council and the Global Seafood Alliance have come under fire for certified farms and factories that have been linked to forced labor in some of these recent exposés. And the MSC was among them last year, the first investigation into forced labor in China seafood processing plants was really critical of the MSC. They questioned what the use was of a certification standard if all these abuses could be happening. Now, the MSC has said, hey, our standard measures the sustainability of fisheries, not of a workplace. Nonetheless, it didn't come out looking very well. So others have also taken shots at the MSC. Its version 3 standard is being blasted by several companies for being nigh inattainable. And this is what Dom's story was focused on. Fisheries that are extremely important to the MSC program, North Atlantic cod and haddock in particular, were very upset about what the standard would require, this version 3 standard. Now, that standard was pushed back. The MSC was kind of vague on why they did it, but behind the scenes, people in the industry have told us that the pressure from fisheries was one of the main reasons. Now, that decision ended up opening the MSC to attacks from what should be its biggest supporter, the NGO community. Now, a group called On the Hook was formed a couple of years ago to highlight all the MSC's shortcomings. It blasted the MSC for its delay of the version 3 implementation, saying it was a loss for protected species, small-scale fisheries, and the climate. And to add insult to injury, the MSC itself is the target of NGO protests. Now, this kind of direct action used to be the realm of Greenpeace hanging banners from Tesco stores, etc. But now it's groups that are demonstrating in front of Tesco's, criticizing the certification of certain fisheries to the MSC standard. So the MSC is getting it from all sides. All that said, the MSC is absolutely not going away. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of MSC products continue to be sold. But the landscape for sustainability is rapidly changing right now, John. So we dug into some of the MSC numbers that tell a kind of interesting story. And we want to talk today about what the future is for the MSC and the future of sustainably certified fisheries. So let's get into this, John.
Well, one of the ones that we looked at in the annual report was what percentage of wild marine catch was engaged in the MSC program. And engaged is an interesting word. It doesn't mean just certified. It means certified ones, obviously, but also those in assessment, which are those trying to get certified, whether they ever do or not. Those that have been suspended, why they're in there, I don't really know. And those that are, quote unquote, in transition to MSC. So it's a big catch-all. But the interesting part of it is, in the newest report, the 2022-2023 report, 19% of all wild marine catch was engaged with the MSC. Okay, that's basically flat, and it's been flat for a while. It actually decreased a little bit from the year before, and we're talking about 15 million tons globally. Now, it's worth bearing in mind that, and I'm looking at a press release from 2017 in which the MSC set a goal of engaging 20% of global marine catch in its program by 2020. No, it's not there. So I guess the point is, it's they're not really growing in the sense of certifying more fisheries around the world. So what does that mean? I mean, this group's been around for many years. I'm trying to think, probably, you know, at least two decades plus. It's at a point now where its growth has slowed significantly, and not just in the number of certified fisheries. It's also slowed in other areas that they track, in the number of labeled products that are available. And so, you know, it begs the question is, what is the future for the MSC? Are they topped out? I don't know. Do you think they're topped out, Drew? Or where do you see the growth coming from? Because the fisheries, if you look a little deeper, the fisheries that you mentioned as being the bedrock of them, and we're talking about whitefish, Alaska whitefish, Russian whitefish, pollock in particular, Alaska salmon, those fisheries have actually, there's less and less of that fish certified over the last few years. So I don't know. It's just an interesting question to see if they've hit the zenith, and if they have, what does that mean?
Well, I think to answer your question, are they running out of places to grow? Well, I think the fact that only 19% of the world's wild fisheries are engaged, and that number has stayed the same going as far back as 2019, 2020. So we're talking about their annual reports, so it's a little bit confusing. So it'll be, you know, 2022, 2023 is the most recent report. So looking at 2020 to 2019, that annual report, 17.4% of all its marine catch was certified. And that was the last year that there was any significant growth, as you mentioned, John. And so what's actually happened is we've seen an erosion of the fisheries in the program. Now, like you said, engaged is, that word is a little bit, I think, misleading, because it sounds like there are fisheries that are moving towards certification or you know, under assessment, which it does, but it's adding that suspended word in there that makes me think, well, how exactly should that be included as engaged? Well, they're still, you know, maybe actively working with the program, I suppose, but some of those fisheries are not going to get their certificates back necessarily, especially if the fears these fisheries had about version 3 indeed are founded. If you were to lose cod and haddock, imagine if you were to completely lose some of the pelagic fisheries, then you see a dramatic reduction in the amount that's certified and things begin to backslide. Now, I know that MSC will continually say it's a charity, it's an NGO, but it's still essentially a competitive and capitalist operation. So it wants growth, it wants to see things moving forward and upwards, and so there is incentive for them to really go out and recruit new fisheries because some of their mainstays may be falling by the wayside if it is indeed true, and we have no reason to think that it isn't, that some of the targets on the version 3 standard can't be met. Similarly, there's constantly issues. As I mentioned, the pelagics in the North Atlantic, when they were suspended, will they be able to get it back? Things like lobster. A lot of these fisheries, it may be a long time, if ever, before they re-engage with the MSC program or actually get recertified. So, you know, as you said, where's that next 1-2% going to come from for them to hit their goal? I don't know. But yeah, I agree, John. I think in addition to the amount engaged, you also see it on the products sold as well. So we see a huge flatness and a no growth in the amount of MSC labeled products that are being sold. So last year, 20,838 products. That's up just a few hundred from the 2020-2021 annual report. So yeah, there's some real flatness.
Now they might say and it's somewhat of a phenomenon that's been going on for a little bit, but that a lot of companies don't put the label on any longer, don't put it on their packages. And for whatever reasons. So, you know, maybe that's a contributor, but that's even more disturbing to me that a label that's been, it's been pitched as, you know, something that the consumer's looking for out there and vital to, you know, the sustainability story of seafood and a separator at the market between those with the label and those aren't. If companies elect not to put those on, they're clearly saying something. And it sounds to me like they're saying they don't necessarily see it as important to have the label on. But, you know, I don't, that's conjecture to some degree. But one thing that is true is that the label is a wholesale label in the sense that wholesalers and their buyers they're the force behind this label, not consumers. So it's a little disturbing, but I wanted to get to your point about the new standard too, because something that struck me in the story that our colleague Dom did was a quote by Tor Larsen. He's a advisor with the Norwegian Fishermen's Association. And he had a quote that said, he was talking about the new standard and the bureaucracy of the MSC and stuff. And he said, "I have serious doubts the new standard will cause positive changes on the water, but they will certainly cause some changes in the office." And by that, he meant the record keeping, the costs of maintaining it and all that. That struck me because one of the early founders of the MSC, Mike Sutton, who was with the World Wildlife Fund just back in the late 90s, his mantra has always been, will it make a difference on the water? And that was his, it's always been his measurement. And it always struck me as a rational kind of approach to evaluating these labels and these certifications. And here we have somebody saying, oh, okay, they changed the standard again, but doesn't look like it's going to do much in the oceans, much towards the ultimate goal of making fisheries sustainable, or more sustainable, I guess, in this case. So it just feels to me like the MSC is losing the confidence of this sector more and more, but the sector has nowhere to go. You know what, yeah. I mean? It's just like there are other competing wild fishery certification programs, RFM, etc., but they are, I guess at this point, they don't appear to be equal alternatives or better alternatives to what they have with the MSC.
No, and there's no certification body that's going to come along anytime soon in the foreseeable future that can replace what the MSC has done in terms of its entire system of certifying fisheries and getting the products down into the value chain. Maybe there is an opening for that right now. I'm not sure because, as you said, is it that all the fisheries that are going to meet sort of broad definitions of sustainability, have those now all been certified? Is it 19%? Is it 19%?
It might be.
And that's a good question to ask, because can there be changes on the water like you talked about? Yeah, of course. And that's everyone's hope. But by the same token, that doesn't happen just by someone saying, oh, I'm going to go get an MSC certification, so then I'll make all these changes. There's so many reasons why it doesn't work that way. For the most part, most of these fisheries haven't had to make any changes to get MSC certified. I mean, you can argue that point with me, but most of them haven't had to change anything significant, and I mean big fisheries management significant, to get MSC certification, because all those things were already in place. And that's been the MSC, it's been the criticism of the MSC often has been, well, wait, we're already sustainable, so now you have to tell us we're sustainable. Now, having a third party person say, hey, we've audited you and you are meeting these benchmarks, critically important. But there's kind of a point. It just comes down to whether or not retailers are really going to see that some of these alternatives are actually viable as the MSC. Right now, there's too many retailers that take that as the ticket to entry. But I would argue that we're in a place now where how eco-labels work is under question and whether or not they can be trusted. So there may be a moment here where the industry is able to make this argument that we're talking about here, John, that, wait a minute, these eco labels that are touting themselves as robust, maybe they're not offering you as much assurance as you thought they were. So that could be an opening for other certification groups or for fisheries to sort of argue different points about different ways of looking at eco labels and the MSC in particular. But either way, there's definitely a stall here.
You know, when we looked at those numbers, both of us said, wow, you know, 19%, and they've been there, they're stuck there. If that's a company, say that's just a private company and they've been stuck at a revenue number for 5 years or 6 years, they would do something, right? They would come up with a new strategy to boost revenue and whatever that might be. So can the MSC do something to boost that 19% that they're not already doing, or have they pretty much hit the wall?
And not just a wall, but then there's the contraction. There's the loss of some of these high volume fisheries. If you start looking at the fisheries that could fall off, like we talked about earlier, John, if you look at cod, haddock, pollock, if any of those fisheries lose their stamp, there's a huge, huge, huge problem. And what that does is it adds to this kind of suspicion of eco labels in the way that that the ASC, Aquaculture Stewardship Council, and Global Seafood Alliance faced is it starts to raise uncomfortable questions about how hamstrung these groups can be when they get into a certain area, you know? And it's difficult, right? Andrew Mallison, who came onto our podcast a couple weeks ago, I think really, really eloquently discussed what eco-labels can and can't do, what certification standards should and shouldn't do. But one of his key points was probably retailers need to think, okay, I need more than just an eco-label, because it's very, very likely and possible, as we've seen, that some of these fisheries could pull out on their own accord. If they had the opportunity, I guarantee you there are many major fisheries who would happily not go through the MSC program. Happily. I mean, you know this, John, this has been forever. The Alaska pollock industry in the United States is one big one. They've never been happy with the process on the very beginning. And they've also been trying to push forward with this RFM label, both for salmon and whitefish. And you can see why. It's expensive, it's time consuming, and in some ways there's a real argument to be made that the effort that goes into getting certification doesn't necessarily get rewarded, or competitors, because again, we have to couch it in business language, competitors can get the eco label and all that work and effort that a fishery put in early on then gets completely undercut.
Yeah. Okay. So even though it may not get rewarded, pulling out will get you punished more. And I think that's the bigger risk, right? If you, let's just say the Alaska salmon guys walk away from it.
Remember they have, that they tried that.
They have in the past.
And it didn't go well.
No, it didn't go well. So, you know, that's a cautionary tale, because if they pulled out, what would the media look like coming from that story, you know? And what would the MSC say? Would the MSC actually criticize these guys in an attempt to bring them back somehow? I mean, the MSC, let's keep in mind that there's been lawsuits out there, and there are lawsuits out there that challenge the efficacy of this label to begin with, as far as advertising and marketing messages that, oh, it's got the label, so it's, you know, it's all good, sustainable fisheries. You know, there's been a lot of public attention put on whether this label really means anything. Now, you know, that's a whole nother debate, but it just doesn't reflect good on the label itself. Now, is that enough for somebody to say, ah, let's walk away from it? Somebody big like the pollock guys, or, you know, the salmon guys. I don't think anybody's got the courage to do that, or, and it's not necessarily courage. I don't think anybody, you know, is ready to do that or wants to do that, but that's something to look for. If something like that were to happen, you know, that's a game changer, I would say.
I mean, I don't see retailers, as we said earlier, I don't see retailers stepping away from the MSC. I always think that will be one of the factors that will help them in their purchasing decisions.
Yeah, I don't think the retailers can, extricate themselves from the MSC. I just don't think they can. Now, let's keep in mind how this all went, right? The MSC program was created. The industry freaked out, pushed back. The MSC kept going, and started to get a little critical mass with some big fisheries, which we mentioned. And then the retailers came aboard. Well, the retailers largely came aboard because they were getting pushback from the top of their companies, from the corporate offices, saying, hey, look, we need something to say the fish we're selling is not ruining the oceans, blah, blah, blah. So it's been a top-down situation on the retail side. So that makes me really feel that you're not going to see a retailer kind of jump out of the program. I just don't, they don't really have anywhere to go. So if you don't have anywhere to go in this case, you probably stay where you are. The nomads, those types of big suppliers, maybe. But again, I think it's a question of where do you go? Because if you don't have this label, you know, the likelihood of punishment in the marketplace, it exists. Whether it would happen, I don't know. I mean, one thing we got to keep in mind is this really isn't a consumer label. So you're not likely to get a lot of like consumers up in arms. Oh my God, no more label. You know, I don't think you're going to see that, but you know, at the wholesale level, maybe, I don't know. But for retailers, they got nowhere to go. So I don't see that they'll get rid of the MSC anytime in the near term.
Why would you? You know, it's an easy way to, again, we've seen the shortfalls or the shortcomings of that. And we saw it with these investigations into China and India. And the shortcomings are that if you just rely on that label, that's not going to give you the assurance that you need, especially on the labor side. But that said, it's such an easy thing to fit into a decision tree as to whether or not you're going to purchase a product. So I agree that it's going to be very difficult for any other standard to kind of enter into that space. However, I can see retailers making more of an effort to engage with the fisheries where they purchase their products, understand the dynamics of those fisheries better. And this is happening. This is already happening, in some cases to great effect. In some cases, fisheries that were either suspended for whatever reason or could not meet the standard were able to work with buyers and show buyers that their management and that all their processes did indeed meet the bar for sustainability. So it could be that we see more retailers, food service buyers, processing companies taking that route and viewing the MSC as maybe a ticket to some buyers, but not every buyer. Maybe important for some consumers, but not every consumer.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly costs a lot of money to, especially if you're a big supplier, to be in compliance and, you know, get all the audits done and the paperwork done with the MSC. So is there a point where it gets so expensive that there's a cheaper way to, quote unquote, do it yourself? Maybe. I don't know. You know, this goes back to what you said, like boots on the ground over in China. You know, would that have helped companies with this labor issue that popped up, you know, this year? So I can't answer that. But, you know, that it'd be very hard as I look at like a big distributor. The MSC label covers such a swath of products, you know, major products that they rely on. We've already said pollock, cod, salmon. It's just the thought of walking away from that, I just don't see it, you know. But it's one of those things, like, it's like insurance, right? You hate insurance. You hate paying the car insurance every month and maybe the homeowners or whatever, but you kind of can't do without it, right? You're just stuck. You're just stuck. They raise their rates. The insurance companies raise their rates 10%. What are you going to do? You know, you could shop around, but you don't really generally get super far that way. So that's the analogy I see with this entire program.
Yeah, and you can see the frustration, right, among the people that have to pay for that insurance.
Sure, aren't you frustrated when you have to write, you know, some stupid insurance check? I mean, but the day you need it, you're like, yeah, I got insurance, I'm all good, you know? So I don't know.
I mean, you mentioned insurance as a metaphor, which kind of works, but kind of doesn't work, because when fisheries have been attacked, the MSC doesn't have the best record of coming to the industry's aid and defending it, right?
True.
I think that's where it gets into this area of it's a must-have, but it's not necessary. You're not going to necessarily get anything back in terms of additional value for your fish. We can push that aside, because I think there's been way too much effort and research done over the years to try to prove that, and I really don't think it's borne out. It remains a ticket to entry for some retailers. I just don't know if it will continue to be that way. I think as we're saying, maybe it's just something that needs to be on some products from a B2B perspective, but maybe the whole logo licensing and kind of capitalist mindset of growth for the MSC is reaching its limits. And to bring it back around, you know, maybe indeed we have reached a level where the fisheries that are sustainable, at least in large volumes, are now certified to the MSC standard.
Yeah, and I mean, I really do think they have capped out. I mean, so they're at 15 million metric tons, right? 19% of the global catch, wild catch is like 90 million metric tons. So, I mean, you look at that. Okay, let me ask you this. Did anybody ever think that the MSC would certify all the global catch, all 100% of it? Now, I never thought that. I don't think the MSC even ever thought that or thinks it. So is, you know, 19% that includes most of the big traded species? I mean, the ones that really have money, move money, move markets, etc. Is that enough? And if it is, what now for the MSC? Is it just a maintenance program? Should they be spending money to recruit new fisheries? Should they be spending money to market their label? Let's say they don't have to spend that money. Could they lower their costs, thus pass those savings on to the industry? I mean, it's worth asking, you know, because when you've been stuck at 19% for the better part of 5 years now, 4 or 5 years, I don't see any big fisheries coming along. Everything's a little, you know, a little smaller and smaller and smaller. And so I would say if they have reached their cap, 19% of the global catch, let's just say, give or take another percent or two, let's just say that's the cap. If they have done that, they could earn tremendous goodwill and probably permanent loyalty if they cut expenses on their part and stopped going out to market the label, stopped going out to recruit new fisheries, blah, 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 and pass savings on to the industry. I think that would build a lot of loyalty and goodwill that it's just not there. I mean, people are just doing this because they have to do this, and that's okay. That's some businesses are like that, but you know, you talked about all the disgruntlement you always hear. You bring it up, and everybody seems to not be happy about it. And so, but it's expensive and it's very time consuming to operate from a company's point of view.
Lots more to explore on this topic, John, but we're going to wrap it up there. Just a reminder that you can go to intrafish.com 24/7 and see our news there with bureaus in Asia, North America, South America, Europe, and Norway. You're going to get coverage from around the world. And mark your calendars, folks. On June 18th, we're going to be hosting a digital event, the IntraFish Aquaculture Innovation Forum. We'll have our usual insightful panelists and great discussions, so you're going to want to take part in that. It is free. Just go to intrafishevents.com and sign up. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.